Okay, good morning, everyone. Another parsha, Parshas Vayera this week, another action-packed parsha. Before we begin, someone mentioned that we should... lots of things happening in the world today, and including the shooting in Vienna. Some of the details are not clear, but maybe dedicated as learning for memory of those that were killed, the welfare of those people that need refuah, and just general security. So just to begin with an overview of the parsha, Parshas Vayera. So the parsha begins with Hashem visiting Avraham Avinu after his circumcision, after his bris, to visit the sick, and then he's wanting to have visitors, and Hashem sends the three angels, one of which gave the news of the birth of Yitzchak. We read later in the parasha about the Hashem's plan to kill Sodom, the city of Sodom, which he does at the end. But the whole discussion that, and the fascinating discussion that Hashem has with Avraham Avinu, where Avraham Avinu pleads on behalf of the people of Sodom not to be killed, and Hashem listens but doesn't listen at the end and goes ahead with the plan. We have the birth of Yitzchak, a very significant event, which also resulted later in the influence that Yishmael was having over Yitzchak and the expulsion from Avraham's home of Yishmael, another incredible story. The pact between Avraham Avinu and Avimelech, Melech Plishtim, and then the parasha ends with the story of the Akedah, the test, the final test that Avraham Avinu was given to offer up his own son as a korban on the altar. The Akedah, of course, is one of the foundations of Jewish experience. We mention it every day. We mention Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur a lot, and so on and so forth. But for today's shir, what I want to do is I want to focus on the first part of the Sedra, the story of the Malachim, especially the story of the three Malachim, and understand it a little bit deeper. And first, I'm just going to learn with you some of the Psukim and then point out a few shorter points and then to go into something a bit more in detail. So let me just share the screen. I think it's this one. Yep. Okay. So Parsha begins, you see the number one. Parsha begins, Vayera Elov Hashem, and Hashem appeared to him, meaning to Avraham. The Eloine Mamre, in the plains of Mamre. V'hu yoshev Pesach ha'oil k'choyim ha'yoyim. He was sitting in the doorway of the tent in the heat of the day when Hashem made it hot not to disturb him, but Avraham Avinu was upset and he wanted guests anyway. He lifts up his eyes and he saw v'nei shleish anashim, there were three people, nitzavim olav, standing upon him. Vayar, and he saw this, vayaretz likrasam, and he ran to greet them. He pesach ha'el from the door of the tent, vayishtach ha'orza, and he bowed to the ground. Vayomar, and Avraham Avinu said, the next word is two explanations, if it's Hashem's name, or he's addressing the masters, the angels, he says, inom matzasi chen be'enecha, if I find favor in your eyes, al no sa'avar malavdecha, please do not go away. He invites them in, he gives them a meal, he runs to get animals, and so on and so forth. Then at the end of it, I'm skipping a few psukim, the Malachim say to him, Vayoymru Elov, they said to him, Aye, sorry, Ishtecha, where's Sarah, your wife? Vayoymer, and he said, Hinei Ba'ol, she's in the tent. Vayoymer, and he said, one of them said, Shoiv Oshu Be'lecha Ka'ischai, I'm going to return to you next year, Vinei Vein Lesarah Ishtecha, and behold, there will be a son born to Sarah, your wife. Sarah Shemas Pesach Ha'il, Sarah was listening at the tent, who Acharav, which was behind him, behind Avram. And then the Torah interjects and says, Avram Sarah Zakenim. Avram and Sarah at that point were elderly. Chodal Lias Lesarah Oirach Kanoshim. Sarah had already, she was menopause, she had stopped having the normal cycle of a woman. And therefore, as a result, the Pasuk says, Vatitzchak Sarah Bekirba. Sarah laughed inwardly, silently to herself, Lamer saying, now that I am withered, Vloisi means I'm withered, I'm old, my skin is withered, I'm supposed to have pleasure, I'm supposed to have this intimacy with my husband, and my husband is old. To which Hashem was not pleased, by Yomer Hashem al Avram, and Hashem said to Avram, why did Sarah laugh, saying, "Af umnam eleid vani zakanti, shall I in truth bear a child old as I am?" So Hashem said to Avram, "Hayipolem Hashem dover, is anything too wondrous? Is anything too difficult, so to speak, for Hashem? Lamoyed oshuv eilecha, I will return to you at the same season, ka'eschaya, during this time next year. Ula Sarah vein, and Sarah will have a son." Okay. So, a few things just to point out of here. First of all, we know that Torah comes from the word hoira. Torah comes from the word instruction. Every story, everything we learn in Torah always has to have a lesson. And just from the story, the very beginning, there's tremendous lessons here. One lesson is, to all of us, one lesson is that even when someone has accomplished a tremendous amount, we have to understand the context here. Avraham Avinu was desperate for visitors. Avraham Avinu was 99 years old, and Avraham Avinu was just recovering from an operation, from Bris Milah. Yet he wanted to have visitors. Now, why did Avraham Avinu want to have visitors? Not only because he was naturally hospitable, which he was kind and generous and accepting, but there was also a godly aspect to his having visitors, as we know, that the Medrash tells us that when Avraham Avinu used to entertain and he used to be hospitable to wayfarers and people that were going by, he would use the opportunity to inspire them and to teach them and to bring them across the line to become part of the monotheistic movement which he had begun. So it was to reach out, it was to feed them physically in terms of sustenance, but lift them spiritually in terms of their belief. So it happens to all of us. It happens that sometimes when we've done a lot, people always say, you know, I've done my thing, I've done my time, I've accomplished an amazing amount. It's time to slow down. One of the things we learned from Avraham Avinu, there's no slowing down. He's 99, he's recovering, it's hot outside, and yet he's looking and he's waiting. Maybe there's someone else who I can inspire. Maybe there's someone else who I can teach. Maybe there's someone else who I can feed. Maybe there's someone else who I can lift up. That's one important lesson. This is something that the Lubavitcher Rebbe once pointed out. As we know, he was very, very against retirement. And he always pointed out that as long as we can keep moving, we need to keep accomplishing and keep doing and keep going. The other lesson, related lesson, that not only don't we slow down with regard to what we're doing for others, we also should never slow down with regard to ourselves. In other words, in terms of our own growth. In terms of our own growth, where we think that we're set in our ways, we think we're older, we think we've experienced a lot, and yes, maybe there was a time in life where we did change, we did improve, and we did move along. We learned from Avraham Avinu that never, ever should we stop growing. How do we see this? I'll just share with you a little story, a famous story. A famous story to do with Parshas Vayera. It's a story with the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, whose birthday is this coming Shabbos, the 20th of Cheshvan. And when he was a young boy, he was about 4 or 5 apparently, he went into his grandfather, who was then the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, to receive a bracha for his birthday, and it was this Parsha. And he went into his grandfather, Tzemach Tzedek, and he began to cry. I think I've told the story before, probably. And the Tzemach Tzedek asked him, "What are you crying?" So listen to what a young child cries for, not because his sister didn't give him enough candy or didn't share fairly in the ice cream. He cries and he said, because he learned this week in Cheder that Hashem appeared to Avraham Avinu. And he's crying because how come Hashem appeared to Avraham Avinu, but he doesn't appear to me? That's why he cried. So the Tzemach Tzedek answered him and he said the following. He said, "You need to understand, as a Yid, a Jew, who 99 year old," that's what he told him in Yiddish, who's 99, "and he decides that it's time to circumcise himself, he deserves for Hashem to appear to him." And there's a lot of depth in the story, but one of the ideas in the story is as follows. What is the response? The response is as follows. If a person wants revelation of Hashem, if a person wants connection to Hashem, there's only one way, and that's through growth. What is bris? What is a circumcision? A circumcision is many things, but at one level, a circumcision is the concept that we are not perfect, that there's still to do. Hashem created the person imperfect, Chazal tell us, in order that we should perfect ourselves. That's the symbolism, that's the lesson of this concept of a bris milah, the concept of a circumcision. The idea is that we have orla, we have things covering. There's a concept of orlas. We find in many, many sfarim that there's three circumcisions, there's three bris. There's orlas, there's the regular circumcision, it's the foreskin covering that needs to be taken away. There's the orlas haloshen, there's the language that we have, which we need to always perfect, how we speak and how we talk. And there's the orlas halev, there's the skin over the heart. As we learn in Devarim that Hashem told, Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, let umaltem Hashem, Hashem will assist us. As Hashem will circumcise the skin of our heart. In other words, to uncover the blockage, to uncover that which stands in the way of revelation. That's which stands in the way of spiritual expression. So therefore, the concept of a bris is removing those things that still stand in the way of our proper divine connection and our proper divine expression. Which is why the concept of a bris we are taught is not just a one-time thing. It's an ongoing process, an ongoing concept. That's why in even halachically we find that the bris is an ongoing mitzvah. So the Tzemach Tzedek told the young boy, and he said, when a person is 99 is that little bit before perfection. We know 100 is the number of perfection in many, many places. But a person realizes, no, I'm not 100, I'm 99. I might have done amazing things in my life. I might have grown tremendously. But growth, as long as we're alive, growth never stops. Even though we might have accomplished an amazing amount, but we might be 99, but there's still something to fix. There's still an improvement to improve on. There's still progress to be made. And when a person realizes that even when growth becomes more difficult, and as we get older, growth is more difficult because we become more set and more stuck in who we are. So he said, someone who is prepared to circumcise himself, someone that's prepared to grow, he deserves for that divine revelation to take place. So therefore we find that this concept by Avraham Avinu, in this parasha we learn these two lessons. Number one, that he never stopped doing for others. Whatever his mission was in terms of inspiring and helping others, even in this situation, he still kept going. And also he never stopped with regard to himself. He still kept growing, and that's a lesson that we have. Interesting, in terms of growth, I just read something on last week's parasha, but it's so connected. Last week's parasha, we talked about the mitzvah of lech lecha, right? Of going out of yourself, going to Eretz Yisrael. So it's interesting that this started a relationship between Hashem and Avraham Avinu as the first Jew. So it's fascinating that when Hashem starts talking to Avraham Avinu and he gives him the first mitzvah, the very, very first mitzvah, what is the first mitzvah? Is it to learn Torah? Is it to keep Shabbos? What's the first thing that Hashem tells Avraham Avinu to do in his whole life, which created the connection, the Jewish connection between Hashem and Avraham Avinu? The very first mitzvah is Lech Lecha. You want to know how you relate, how you establish a relationship between a Yid and Hashem? Lech Lecha, you have to be prepared to grow. You have to be prepared always to go beyond yourself, beyond your own comfort zone, beyond where you are at the moment, beyond the rigidity of what the environment and your parents' house and your behavior has created for you. You have to be prepared to be lech lecha, to go out of who you are, and everything follows from them. The whole connection to Hashem follows from that. So that's the concept of the bris milah as well, the concept of growth, and that we're never too old for growth. We can always and should always keep growing. That's Avraham Avinu's concept at 99, that he does that. Interesting, the Barditcheva points out, I just want to share with you one or two short veretla before we go into something a bit longer. The Barditcheva points out the following. He says, the Pasuk says over here, Vayera Eilov Hashem. Hashem appeared to him. So the Barditcheva Rev asks, why doesn't it say Vayera El Avram? Why doesn't it say Hashem appeared to Avram? Why does it say appeared to him? And he said something very beautiful, which is connected to the concept of growth that we said before, connected to the concept of bris. He says that the way Hashem infuses the world with his flow of energy, with his flow of godly revelation, is in two ways. Sometimes it goes through a whole process of tzimtzum, meaning it goes through a whole process that we know in Kabbalah to be, it gets hidden and it gets diluted, it gets contracted, it gets fitted for the limitations and the finiteness of this world. And then sometimes a person is zoicha, a person merits to get from Hashem an infusion of godliness which transcends the limitations of this world, and it's just bleak vul, it's limitless and it's infinite, and it bypasses the whole process of tzimtzum. He says a name is a description. A name represents the finiteness of a person, the way a person is described in a particular definition. It could be a very lofty name, it could be a very holy name, but a name is still something which limits, it's still descriptive, meaning, and therefore it's still something that creates a particular definition. He says, when a person goes a mesiras nefesh, when a person goes on self-sacrifice, a mesiras nefesh means not only, as we know many, many places, mesiras nefesh does not only mean to die for Hashem, it means going beyond ourselves, putting in the effort, giving ourselves a push to go beyond who we are. In other words, we rise above our own definition. Says the Baditshva, then we rise above our own name. And we're able then to connect to that which is beyond description, to that which is infinity, that revelation from Hashem which is limitless and bypasses the whole process of the tzimtzum. And that's why right after Avraham Avinu passes the test and he goes through with the circumcision, which was difficult physically, but it also symbolizes that spiritual mesiras nefesh. At that point, Vayera Elov Hashem. Hashem appears to him. It doesn't say Hashem appears to Avram. Hashem appears to him, to his essence, to that part of him which is beyond the name, which is beyond the description and the finiteness of Avram Avinu. So it sort of fits in what we talked about before. And finally, before we go into something deeper, I want to share with you a beautiful idea tied into all of this from the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim said, the Torah tells us about, here we are, Sarah laughing, and Sarah saying, "Acharei beloisi hoisa li edna," that I'm withered away, I'm too old for this already, how can I have a child? And Hashem was a little bit upset with her. So the Chafetz Chaim asked the question, and he says, why would the Torah go into detail with that part of the story? Why is that important? Why would the Torah, so to speak, highlight seeming weakness in Sarah? That Sarah somehow was lacking emunah, she was lacking faith. Why would the Torah want to do that? What relevance does it have? But of course, the Chafetz Chaim says the following, and he says this is a lesson we need to learn on a global level. Something I think very, very important, maybe particularly in our times. That he says, we know that the Torah is Maisei Ovei Simen Labanim. We've mentioned this many, many times. That the Torah tells the stories of the forefathers, because whatever happens to the forefathers is a simon, it's a sign, it sort of defines what was going to happen to the descendants. And therefore he says, throughout the ages, we had tzaddikim, we had neviim, we have prophets that tell us to strengthen ourselves in our emunah, including, he says, the Chafetz Chaim, the emunah, the faith, that we will be zoicha, we will experience geula, will experience redemption. And therefore the Torah warns us that just like Sarah said that to herself, we all experience that. There comes a point where we go through a lot, we experience darkness. Excuse me, the world's in a state of confusion, moral decline, distortion of values, anti-Semitism, whatever the world is going through, and it's getting a long time and it's already so long after we were given this promise. So therefore there's a danger, and that's why the Torah has to highlight it. Because there's a danger, just like Sarah naturally looked at herself and she was beyond childbearing age. And as Chazal tell us, she was beyond the point of ever naturally even being able to have children, altogether physically. And we look at ourselves and we say to ourselves, "Acharei beloisi hoisa li edna," we are withered. It's too much, it's too long. We don't see so many before us have tried. So many signs, so many wonderful opportunities happened through the Golus where we thought that was it. Mashiach was going to come. The Geula was going to take place. The redemption was going to take place. And the Beis HaMikdash was going to be built. It just doesn't seem like it's happening. It doesn't seem like there's a pathway to that taking place. Hashem highlights that. He tells the story of Sarah because there's a purpose in telling the story. Because we do the same thing, deep down, either we verbalize it or we think it, just like Sarah did. We say, come on, it's we're with it. It's too old. We're sort of too old for this. And Hashem says, what do you mean? Hayipole mehashem dover. Is anything too wondrous for Hashem? And the word pele, what does it mean? Hayipole. The word pele means wonders. A pele means something which is way beyond nature. Something which is completely beyond human logic. Something that we don't even expect. Something that is completely crazy. Chazal tell us, the Chofetz Chaim doesn't bring this, but Chazal tell us that Ein ben David bo elo behesach hadas. That Mashiach will come, ben David, in other words, Mashiach will come behesach hadas, in other words, unexpectedly. Which seems interesting. What does it mean unexpectedly? Aren't we told we're supposed to expect him every day? Aren't we told we're supposed to say animamin? It's one of the 13 animamins. And as the Rambam brings it, he says, "Bechol yoyim achakaloi," that a person is commanded not only to believe in the coming of Mashiach, but actually every single day to think and to believe and to expect his coming. So how can we say he's coming unexpectedly? If we do what we're supposed to do, then he won't be unexpected. We are expecting him. But what does it mean? Hesach hadas, unexpected, means that it's an experience that will take place that is beyond our wildest imagination. Of course we expect it to happen, but it will be something that will be so wondrous, that something that's impossible to imagine. Says Hashem in this pasuk, Hayipole ma Hashem dover. Do you think anything is too wondrous for Hashem? Yes, it's a miracle. Yes, it's beyond logic. Just like Sarah having children. Yes, it doesn't make any sense. But Lamoyed Oshvi Lecham, coming back to you, will the Sarah bain, she will give birth to a child. And we know that Geula, redemption, is compared to birth. The Golus is compared to labor pains, and Geula is compared to birth. So therefore the birth will happen. And that's what the Chofetz Chaim says, that's why the Torah says this part. That he says that Yid has to know that even when it looks like it's just not happening, it looks like it's just something that doesn't seem expected, doesn't seem to be happening, doesn't seem possible, doesn't seem humanly or logically possible, to the point that we say it's been so long, and therefore we've given up hope. Achare beloisi li edno, I'm too withered for this. You have to know, no. Hayipole ma'ashem dover, nothing's too wondrous. For Hashem to do, we need to believe that although it seems so long, it didn't happen till now, but it will happen. Ulasara bein, there will be a birth and there will be geula. I suppose also tied in something I think we were talking about on Yom Kippur or before Yom Kippur. This year, Tovshin Pei Aleph. The Pei Aleph is Rosh HaTevis. Pelois Arenu. That Hashem says, I will show you wonders. So let's hope that this is the year with the Sarah Bain, that in fact the Geula will come. Okay, so those are some of the lessons from the first part of the parasha. Okay, now, what I want to focus on is the three angels. The three people that show up at Avraham Avinu. Let's just read the pasuk again. Here we are. This pasuk. Vayisa eino vayar. He lifts up his eyes and he sees v'hinei shloisha anoshim, there were three men. Nitzavim olav, standing right there. Vayar. He saw vayorotz likrosam, he went to greet them. He pesach oil from the door of the tent. Vayishtach ha'orza and Avraham Avinu b'avda. So we know the famous Rashi, that of course, these three men were not three men, they were three malochim, they were three angels. It's not clear from the Mefarshim exactly, because at some stage Avraham Avinu obviously realized they were angels, not sure exactly what point that is, but they were angels. And who were they? So let's have a look. So famous Rashi, here number two. Rashi says, Echad levaseir es sara. One of these, it's in the bowl there, right? Echad levaser es Sarah, one came to give the good news to Sarah. The echad lehapich es Sodom, one of these angels came to overturn Sodom, to destroy Sodom. The echad lerapois es Sarah, echad lerapois es Avram, and one to heal Avram from the bris. Why do we need three? Says Rashi, the famous concept. She'ein malach echad oisei shtei shlichuyos. Because one malach doesn't do two missions. There's a rule that when a malach is sent on a mission, a malach does not multitask. A malach is only given one mission at a time. Now, how do we know this? Says Rashi. Rashi proves it from the way the psukim play themselves out. And let's learn it together. Says Rashi, teidi lacha. You should know. Shekein kol ha-parsha. In the whole parsha, hu mazkiron b'loshen rabbi. It keeps mentioning them in the plural. Vayoichlu, they ate. Vayoimru elov, they said to him, where is Sarah? However, when it comes to their missions, it suddenly switches to singular. Because ubi psura, with the good news to Avraham that she would have a child, Nemarat says, Vayoimer, he said, Shoiv Oshev Elecho, I will come back next year. Uba hafichas doim, and we see when Sodom is turned over, who Omer, the Malach says to Lot, you better get out of here because Le'uchal lasis dover, I in the singular cannot do, not we. Or Levilti hopchi, because I am going to overturn this doim. So it's all in the singular. In other words, they came as a group, but when it comes to the missions, we find each one does singularly their mission. Now, the truth is, so there's three missions. One to give news to Sarah, one to destroy Sodom, one to heal Abraham. But we also know there was a fourth mission. What's the fourth mission? Says Rashi, V'Rafael Sheripo Es Avraham. One of these malachim who was Rafael, the malach of healing, who healed Abraham, Holach Misham Lahatzilas Lot. He went there to save Lot. He saved Avraham Avinu's nephew from Sodom. When they destroyed Sodom, Lot was saved, and he was the one to save him. Hu Shenemar, and that's what it says, when I took them outside, by Yoimer, he said, that Malach said, he molate al nafshecha, escape. We see that one of these Malachim who went to Sodom was the one who saved Lot. So that's a fourth mission. Why is it a fourth mission? It says Sirashi is not really a fourth mission. It's a similar concept. The one who healed Abraham was also the one to save Lot. Okay. I'll just point out a couple of interesting things before we take this a lot deeper. So, interesting, Rashi, there's another Rashi later on that points out that over here, they're called Anoshim, they're called men. Later on, when they go to Sodom, it says Malachim in the Torah, it says angels, later on in the Parsha. Why? So it says, because Avraham Avinu was a person who encountered angels very, very often. So to him, angels wasn't a big deal. So therefore, to him, angels was like men, like regular people. So that's why it says Anoshim. Later on, they go to Sodom. Lot wasn't used to Malachim. Therefore, over there, it calls it Malachim. Now, who are these Malachim? Who are these Malachim? So we say, Chazal tell us that these Malachim were the three famous angels. Michael. Now, remember this because we're going to come back to this in great detail soon. Michael, Gavriel, and Raphael. Michael, Gavriel, and Raphael. Says the Bala Turim, interesting, where it introduces these three malachim. It says, in over here, I'm just going to highlight it so you see it. It says, Vehine Shloisha, behold, there were three of these angels. It says the Bala Turim, Vehine Shloisha, the words Vehine Shloisha, has the gematria of Michael, Gavriel, and Raphael. So there you are. It's hinted, these are the three malachim. Now, first thing I want to do is I want to share with you a beautiful word from one of the Skulena Rebbes called the Noyam Eliezer. His name was Rebbe Eliezer Zusha Portugal from Skulen, one of the Skulena Rebbes. And he says the following thing. He says, look at the beginning of this Rashi, where Rashi tells us what the three malachim came from. Right over here. It says one came to give news to Sarah, one came to destroy Sodom, and one to heal Abraham. Right? So it doesn't even mention Lot at this point. So he says it's completely out of order. Right? It should have said one came to give the news to Sarah, one came to heal Abraham, and one came to destroy Sodom. In fact, more than that, it should have been completely the other order. The first one should have right away, why should Avraham Avinu be in pain? The first one should right away come and heal Avraham. So the first one should heal Avraham. Then the second one should tell the news of Sarah. And then the third one will go off to Sodom to destroy Sodom. Right? So it's completely out of order. So he says a very interesting idea. Listen to this. He says, why were the three malachim? Why were the three malachim? So, I mentioned before that Chazal tell us that Ein Malach Echad Oysa Shtei Shluchiyos, one Malach cannot do two missions. Why is that, by the way? Why are malachim two missions? So one of the explanations that's given is that, of course, a malach could, if Hashem wanted him to, but there's this concept, we find this by Matan Torah, there's this concept that one of the ways that Hashem's glory is highlighted, one of the ways that Hashem's majesty is emphasized, his kingship, as we see at Matan Torah, where it says in the Torah that Hashem revealed himself at Har Sinai with tens and tens of thousands of angels. There was like a whole retinue, in other words, an entourage, which the Yidden were able to see. So we are taught, and perhaps it's a different discussion to understand exactly why that is, but we are taught that the multitude of malachim, the multitude of angels, highlight the infinite greatness of Hashem's majesty. So therefore, when Hashem wants to enact, he wants to do a bunch of things in this world through the malachim. Now, of course, malachim have no autonomy. Malachim don't do anything. They're just messengers from Hashem to carry out certain missions. So therefore, Hashem structured it in such a way where there's three malachim doing three things, where each malach does one thing, so that there's always an abundance of malachim. There's always an abundance of angels which highlight and they emphasize the glory of Hashem. That's what he says. In which case, there's a very big question. In which case, there should have been four malachim. If one of the missions was also to rescue Lot, so it's all very good to say, well, it's not really four missions because healing Avraham and rescuing Lot is very much the same idea. Yeah, that's true. In other words, if it was impossible to do more than one mission, if that was the issue, then we could say these two missions fall into one category. But if the idea is to add as many malachim as possible to increase the abundance of angels, because the abundance of angels highlights the glory of Hashem, so why didn't Hashem just send a fourth malach to rescue Lot? Why did it need to be three malachim? So he says a very beautiful thing. He says when Hashem sends bracha to the world, right? We know this concept. Hashem set up a system. Part of Hashem's system is that there's midas hadin. There's the attribute of judgment. And sometimes when Hashem wants to give good to people, the attribute of that judgment, or the prosecutors or the malachim of judgment, do their job and they mekatreg, they prosecute. They highlight the weaknesses of the person. They highlight that perhaps the person doesn't deserve what he's going to get. Perhaps that a person should be punished, whatever the reason is. And that's always a problem. Sometimes midas hadin, the attribute of judgment, stands in the way of the person getting the bracha from Hashem. Now, sometimes we can circumvent that. We know that in Rosh Hashanah we have tshuva and we blow shofar and we are told that shofar eliminates, so to speak, the midas hadin, got to do with our tshuva, and transforms din into rachamim, and so on. But it's always an effort. When we daven, it's the same thing. We ask Hashem for rachamim. We mentioned this last week. We have to mention the forefathers, and so on and so forth. And sometimes what happens is there's a discussion in Shamayim, and the only way to do it, we find this concept many times. We find this, for example, by Kriyas Yamsuf, when the sea was splitting, and the Jews were trapped, and Mitzrayim was pursuing them, and Hashem was going to split the sea. The Gemara says, Midas Hadin. There was a whole group of angels that came to Hashem and said, what do you mean? The Egyptians serve idols, they serve idols. What's the difference? Why should he save one over the other? And there always has to be a reason. It's the promise to Avraham Avinu. Or sometimes what happens is that a schus, a merit is found. Something good is found that makes the person, that warrants the person should be able to get that bracha. So here we have a problem. Hashem wanted to rescue Lot, because Lot's Avraham Avinu's nephew. Right? But the problem is, Midas Hadin, says the Skolena, Midas Hadin opposed this. Midas, the attribute of judgment, opposes the rescue of Lot. Why? Lot wasn't a very good guy. What did Lot do in last week's parasha, when there was a dispute between the shepherds of Avraham and the shepherds of Lot, and they had to split. And Avraham Avinu says, choose where you want to go. Where does Lot choose to go? Lot chooses to go to Sodom. And he knows that Sodom is an immoral and a corrupt place. What does he do when he gets to Zdoim? He assimilates into Zdoim. He, in fact, when the Malachim came to Zdoim, he had been appointed the judge of Zdoim. That day he was the mayor of the city. He was very fully integrated into Zdoim. And therefore Midas Adin says, Lot went away from Avraham Avinu. He broke off from the inspiration of Avraham Avinu. He took a different path in life. He went to the most immoral and corrupt place. Why should he be rescued? The only way he can be rescued is in the schus of Avraham Avinu. So Hashem, so to speak, says the Skelena, devises a plan. Lot is not going to get his own malach, because he doesn't deserve his own malach. So what does Hashem do? Hashem sends a malach to heal Avraham. Now the truth is, Avraham Avinu doesn't need healing. In fact, it's much better to be healed by Hashem. Don't forget Hashem came to visit him. Hashem doesn't need the shliach. And we know that sometimes Hashem does things himself directly. Sometimes does it through a malach. When he does it himself without a malach, it's much, much stronger, much more eternal. So Avraham Avinu has Hashem right there. Hashem is visiting him. He needs the malach. But what does it mean to heal Avraham? Says the Sagrada, there's two types of healing. There's physical health, and then there's emotional health. There's things that you pain from. Hashem could take care of the physical health. Hashem was right there. But when the malach arrives, and Avraham Avinu gets wind of what's going to happen in Sodom, so besides putting in an effort to save the whole Sodom, and Hashem wouldn't listen to him, but there is his nephew there. There's Lot there. And Hashem, and Avraham Avinu has tremendous tsar, has tremendous pain from the fact that Lot is going to be killed in Sodom. So the malach who comes to heal Avraham, who doesn't really need to heal him physically because he's recuperating and Hashem is visiting him right there, he goes off and he says, well, I need to complete this mission. I need to complete the healing of Avraham. And the healing of Avraham will not be complete only if Avraham recuperates from the bris. Avraham will only be healed if he feels confident and he knows the news that Lot will in fact be saved. It had to be that malach, because it had to come through Avraham, because Lot doesn't deserve his own malach. Says the Skulena, if that's the case, we can understand now what happened. Go back to the Rashi, and we understand, it's beautiful this, we understand the order. Let's see. The order is like this. The first malach came, Levaser es Sarah, to tell the news to Sarah that she can have a child. Why don't we start with Avraham Avinu's healing? Avraham Avinu is taken care of, Hashem is visiting him, he doesn't need healing. The second malach is coming to destroy Zdoim, which part of destroying Zdoim involved Hashem telling Avraham that he's going to destroy Zdoim and that to give Avraham the opportunity to plead on their behalf. That was the second thing. Once Avraham Avinu becomes aware that Zdoim is going to be destroyed, Avraham Avinu has another, so to speak, illness. He has another challenge. He's pained on the fact that Lot is going to be destroyed. Says the Rashi, there's a third malach. V'echod l'rapes es Avraham, the one that came to heal Avraham, which doesn't really need to heal him physically, but as part of healing Avraham, he goes off to save Lot. It was part of Avraham's healing, and that's the only way it could be done, because that's the way Midas Hadin doesn't have a leg to stand on, because really it's in the schus of Avraham, it's not in the schus of Lot himself, because he didn't have a schus, and therefore it was because of Avraham. And that's why the order is, one is to tell the story of Sarah, to tell a story, one to highlight what's going to happen to Zdoim, which then raises the issue of Lot, which is part of Avraham Avinu's own healing, and that's why the third one, to heal Avraham, which includes saving Lot, and that explains the order of those three malachim, and it also explains why there's only three and not four. Okay, now, there's a bigger question in this whole thing. Let's take the first. Why? What's the depth of these three malachim coming? Okay, they have three missions, we understand. But the truth is that it's a bit of a problem with these three missions. First of all, the first comes to tell Sarah the news. Why does Sarah need to know the news? Why was that so important? Yitzchak and Rivka didn't have children. They davened, Hashem answered them. They didn't get forewarning. Eventually she conceived and she knew she's going to have children. Rachel and Yaakov, same thing. We don't find anywhere in the Torah that the various childless, infertile women, the righteous women, who davened for children had a ceremony where they got told that they are going to have a child. Why do we find that, right? Also, okay, we explained what the Skulana says before, but even this thing about coming to heal Avram, he didn't really need healing, Hashem could heal him, and so on and so forth. So I'm going to share with you, as I did last week, a piece from the Shvila Pinchas, a very, very beautiful piece. There's also another question, by the way. If the one of the Malachim came to destroy Zdoim, why did he need to come to Avram first? If Avram needed Malachim because he needed to be hospitable, so two Malachim is enough. The other two needed to come to him. One needed to tell him the news, one needed to heal him. But the one that's going to Zdoim should have gone straight to Zdoim. Why did he have to come to Avram Avinu first? See, here's a whole nother perspective, a very beautiful idea of why the Malachim came, and they came now just after Avram Avinu had a bris. So, bear with me here. We're going to go on a bit of a journey. We find a medrash, a famous medrash, a few places in the different versions of this medrash, that it was in the schus of the su'udah, of the meal, that Avram Avinu gave to these angels, that the Jews got the Torah at Har Sinai. Meaning the Jews received the Torah because of the meal that he gave to the Malachim. How so? So there's a medrash. The medrash says, famous medrash, it's also a Gemara in a different version, that when Hashem wanted to, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up on the mountain to get the Torah, the Malachim ganged up on him. Okay, one version is that they started telling Hashem not to give him the Torah. But another medrash says, Bikshu Malachi Hashores Lifgoya B'Moshe. The Malachim wanted to attack him. They wanted to harm him. What did Hashem do? Hashem changed the appearance of Moshe Rabbeinu that he should look like Avram Avinu. And then Hashem turned to the Malachim and he said, "I atem mizbaishim heimenu? You're not embarrassed of Moshe Rabbeinu, who now looks like Avram Avinu? Isn't this the person who you went and you ate a meal in his house? And now you're attacking them? What kind of gratitude is that?" So therefore, we know that in the schus of the meal, that Avram Avinu fed the Malachim, Moshe Rabbeinu was unharmed, and he was able to get the Torah. What on earth does that medrash mean? In other words, it looks like the whole story of the three Malachim coming to Avram Avinu was that he should give them a meal, and that should be then a pathway for Moshe Rabbeinu to get the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu looks like Avram all of a sudden. What does all this mean? But there's another medrash, a beautiful medrash, that tells us that the bris milah, the concept of circumcision, which, by the way, I should point out, this is a women's shir, of course, but circumcision is not only a man's thing. It's the concept, obviously, physically, it's only a male mitzvah. But the concept of bris, the concept of that covenant, which is between the Jew and Hashem, is everyone. The Gemara just says that women are born with that perfection. In other words, they don't need to have their physical bris, but the concept of the covenant, the concept of what the bris accomplishes, of course, is both by male and female. So the Medrash tells a story of one of the emperors of Rome, Andrianus Caesar, one of the emperors of Rome, who one of his big men came to him called Uncalus. Now that's the same Uncalus he was. He had a different name according to this medrash, Achillas. But Uncalus is the one that became a convert, and he wrote the Targum. He wrote a very holy Pirush on Torah, the Targum Uncalus, which is printed in every Chumash. But what happened originally, Andrianus didn't let him become a ger. But the way it worked was the beginning that Uncalus came to Andrianus the emperor, and he said to him, "Roitza ani lihiskair, I want to convert, and I want to become Jewish." So the emperor said to him, "Are you mad? You want to join this nation? You know how I despise that nation? How many people of that nation I have killed already? What on earth do you suddenly want to get mixed in with this nation?" So so Uncalus said to the emperor, he says, "No. I know exactly how Hashem created the world, what he created on the first day, the second day, and I know everything that has happened. I know this all, because I know there's a Torah. And I know the Torah provides wisdom to the world, and therefore the Torah is something that I want to connect to. So Andriyonis, the Empress, says to him, go learn that Torah. What do you have to go through this whole thing for? In other words, what do you have to become Jewish? And he said, what do you have to go and have a bris milah? What do you have to circumcise yourself for? Just go and learn the Torah. So Uncalus, in his wisdom, to his credit, he turned round to the emperor and he said, Afilu chacham shebal malchuscha vezakan mea shana. You can pick the greatest, wisest person in your kingdom, who might be old and mature and wise and 100 years old. You should know, Eino yochel lilmoy teirosan im eino mol. It's impossible for that person to truly grasp the Torah if he doesn't circumcise himself. Bris milah, the circumcision of the Jew, in other words, that bris, that covenant that the Jew enters between him and Hashem, gives the Jew the possibility to receive the Torah. What does that mean? In other words, it's the schus of the bris milah, the schus of the bris that we can get the Torah. Now, we need to understand why that is. And it is because Torah, as we know, we've talked about many, many times, Torah is not a subject. Torah is something which is beyond human logic. It's not just an academic subject. Yeah. There are parts of Torah that are academic that anyone could grasp at some level. But to truly connect with Torah, to truly really understand and grasp the depth of Torah, and to unite with the Torah, for the Torah to become ours and one with who we are, that's only through rising above who we are. And how do we rise above who we are? That's the symbol of Bris Milah. It's a symbol of circumcision, which is done on the eighth day because it symbolizes the super-rational connection that we have with Hashem. The Bris Milah is what elevates the Jew to beyond the human logic and gives us the connection and the possibility and the opportunity to connect with Hashem's Torah, which is godly wisdom, which is an infinite wisdom, and therefore it's the schus of the Milah. Now we know that when we talk about connecting to the Torah, connecting the Torah, not just reading the Chumash, connecting the Torah actually mainly is through what we call Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebal Peh is where we understand and we get introduced to the secrets of Hashem's Torah, to the depth of Hashem's Torah, and we discover it. That's the whole idea of Torah Shebal Peh, that we learn it and we discover it and we're able to expose, to reveal, to discover, to explore the inner secrets of what's behind the obvious and the psukim of the written Torah. And therefore, we talk about the concept of having the merit, having the schus to receive the Torah, and that comes through the concept of the bris, that is particularly, with particular emphasis, the concept of Torah Shebal Peh. You know, this is also very, very much emphasized in a famous medrash, and I think we mentioned this before, that when Hashem gave us the Torah, I'm not going to go through the whole medrash now, when Hashem gave us the Torah, He said, Oisi atem loichim. When you get the Torah, you're not only taking the Torah, you're getting Hashem with the Torah. Because in order for the Jewish people to really understand the Torah, Hashem's presence has to be there with the Torah. Which, by the way, he doesn't say this, but I want to just point out, there's a famous concept where the Gemara tells us that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. One of the reasons that's given for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is because the Jewish people forgot, or they didn't, say the Bracha on Torah, the Birchas HaTorah, right? Now, is that such a big Aveira? They didn't say the brachas, they didn't say the morning brachas. What does that mean? They didn't say the brachas and Torah, and that brings about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But we know the famous idea. They obviously said the words, that wasn't the issue. The idea of making a bracha before we learn Torah is because we say Baruch Atah Hashem Noisein HaTorah. We acknowledge and we connect to the one who gave us the Torah. When we learn Torah, we should never be learned as an academic subject. We need to understand it. We need to get to its unbelievable intellectual depth. But we also have to always remember when we learn Torah that we're connecting to Hashem. And Hashem is with us in the Torah, because without that recognition and without Hashem's presence being in the Torah, without the connection to Hashem, without the Yirat Shamayim that we have in learning Torah, we cannot really grasp Torah properly. Which is why a similar concept, that it's the bris, the connection to Hashem, the inseparable bond, the super rational bond with Hashem, that gives us the ability to connect to the Torah. And again, when we talk about Torah, what are we talking about? Mainly we're talking about the concept of really understanding the oral Torah. Now, let me share with you a famous thing. Some of you might recognize this from the bedtime Shema, according to Nusach Ashkenaz at least. So we find in Pirkei de Rabbi Loza, Pirkei de Rabbi Loza is a medrash. Let's learn it together. You'll see where this is all going in a minute. The medrash says, Arba kitoy shal malachei ashoreis mekal sinifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are four camps of angels that surround Hashem's presence, so to speak, which, by the way, is connected to the way Hashem revealed himself at Matan Torah, where we've gone through this before, where the Jews saw that Hashem's coming with four different camps of malachim, four inner camps and then four outer camps, and they wanted to dwell the same way, which is why when they camped in the desert, they also had these four camps of tribes around them, and so on and so forth. What are the four camps? Says the Medrash, Pirkei de Rabbi Loza, Machane Rishoyna Shol Michoel, the first camp is the one of Michoel. Mimino, that's to the right of Hashem, so to speak. Mimachane Shnia, the second one, Shol Gavriel, is Gavriel's camp, Al Smoyle, to the left. Machane Shlishi is the third one, Shol Uriel Milafonov, it's a malach called Uriel, who is in front of Hashem, so to speak. Machane Revis, the fourth one, is Shol Raphael, it's Raphael, which is behind him. By the way, those who say the bedtime Shema, Nusach Ashkenaz, where the bedtime Shema is said to ask Hashem for protection through the night or all through the forces that the negative forces that's possible to be at night. So many people say, B'shem Hashem Elokei Yisrael, name of Hashem our God, Mimini Michol, right, to my right is Michol, to my left is Gavriel, in front of me is Uriel, at the back of me is Raphael, and on my head is the Shekhinah, is the divine presence. Now, these three malachim, it's brought down in the sefer called the Geres Hatiu, Kabbalistic sefer. It says that these four malachim, Gavriel, Michael, Raphael, and Uriel, if you put them that way. The Rosh Tevis has the four letters of Gemara. Gemara, the Talmud. What's Gemara? Gemara is the suppository. It's the place where we learn the whole of the oral Torah from. In other words, if there's one body of literature which encapsulates what we know today as the Torah Shebal Peh, everything in the Torah Shebal Peh is rooted in the Gemara. We have the Chumash and we have the Gemara. Chumash is the written Torah. The oral Torah is the Gemara. Gemara is Gavriel, Raphael, Gavriel, Michal, Raphael, and Uriel. That's the four malachim. Now we can start to see where this is going, because this is a bit of a problem. Because we find that three of these malachim came to visit Avraham Avinu. Why? Because we'll see in a moment, and we'll see where Uriel is, but Michal, Gavriel, and Raphael came to visit Avraham Avinu. Why? We'll see in a minute where Uriel comes into it. Because after Avraham Avinu had the bris, he then, as we just said, bris is a prerequisite to Torah, he then was able to set the tone, set the pathway for the Jews to accept the Torah. Which now we understand the depth of that medrash, that when the Malachim wanted to stand in the way of Hashem giving us the Torah, Hashem said, you were by Avraham Avinu, you had the meal there. What does that mean? Don't you remember you visited Avraham Avinu when he had the bris and he served you a meal, and that bris solidified the possibility for the Jews to get the Torah. The problem is, where's Uriel? So the Imre Noyam says, listen to this, that Avraham Avinu himself took the place of Uriel, because the gematria of Avraham is Uriel. Now, the gematria of Avraham was Uriel, because the gematria of Avraham is 248. Uriel is also 248. 248 represents the perfection of the human being, because we have 248 limbs, organs. When Avraham Avinu's name was changed as a prerequisite to the bris, when Avraham Avinu had his name changed from Avram to Avraham and he had a bris, he perfected himself, he became worthy. So therefore, Avram Avinu took the place of Uriel. So therefore, when the Malachim came to Avram Avinu, Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, and Avram, who took the place of Uriel, those became the four Malachim, Gemara, that because that was the time where the possibility of getting the Torah and for the Jewish people to connect to the Torah and understand the Torah and absorb the Torah became a possibility at that time. How? That was emphasized by the unison of these four Malachim, Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, and Uriel, which makes up the word Gemara. Now, why Avram Avinu became Uriel? So we know something about the Malach Uriel. It says in Chazal that Uriel is the Malach which represents Torah. Every Malach has a different function. Uriel is the Malach that represents Torah. Because Uriel actually has another name. There's another Malach, a famous Malach called Ruziel, which has the same gematria. And Ruziel comes to the word Roz Kel, the secrets of Hashem. And in fact, we know there are different months which are governed or affected by different malachim. And in Kabbalah, we learn that the month that the Yidden got the Torah is the month of Sivan, which is the month of Uriel. Right? So therefore, when Avram Avinu had a bris, and Avram Avinu was now ready to receive the Torah, Hashem says, I'm now going to create this possibility. I'm now going to emphasize that the Jews are now ready to get the Torah once the mitzvah of Bris Milah was given. And therefore, I'm going to send the three malachim of Michael, Gabriel, and Raphael. And I'm going to make you connected to the Malach Uriel because it's you who had the Bris and it's you who's going to give the Yidden the possibility of getting the Torah. And Uriel is the Malach of the Torah. And I'm going to be there with you, which is the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah didn't leave. Avraham Avinu said to Hashem, could you please wait? And the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, was there while Avraham Avinu was entertaining the Malachim. So the combination of Hashem being there and Avraham Avinu, who was like Uriel, and the other three Malachim, Michal, Gabriel, and Raphael, which all together makes Gemara, the idea of Gemara, which represents the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Oral Torah, that was a preview to the Har Sinai, to the giving of the Torah, where Hashem revealed himself together with his four camps of Malachim. So Avram Avinu, the Gematria of Uriel, the officer of Torah, the Malach of Torah, together with these three Malachim and the divine Shekhinah, was an enactment of Har Sinai, because it was then, at that point when Avram Avinu had a bris, where Matan Torah became a possibility. It's a very nice explanation, but of course we have to understand what's the lesson to us. The lesson to us is very, very simple. Going back to the beginning of the year, that as long as we are alive, as long as we are want to be connected to Hashem, and our connection to Hashem comes through learning Torah. That is the way we connect to Hashem, when we learn Torah and we internalize this understanding. We know that we connect to Hashem and the Torah are one. And when we learn Torah, we become connected to Hashem. How do we make sure that we can be connected to Torah? How do we make sure that we can receive the Torah every day? Not just Avram Avinu, not just Har Sinai, but how do we experience our own Har Sinai every single day? Through learning from that original lesson, that even Avram Avinu was 99, he understood the power of growth and he was ready to have a bris. When we have our own bris, which means we go beyond ourselves, we go beyond our comfort zone, when we go out of the rigidity of our own limitation, and we remember that we have the opportunity to connect to Hashem in an infinite way, in an unlimited way, in a super rational way, we also, just like Avram Avinu, are able to create the Har Sinai possibility, and we're able then to learn Torah and be connected to the Torah, and through that to be connected to Hashem. I hope that was clear, and I wish everyone a very, very good day. All the best, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi.